The Avengers Follow the White Rabbit is a podcast dedicated to practical politics. Practical politics is, of course, called practical politics because it is all non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is always rule-based politics. Every 2 years, every 4 years, it's basically what you do at the voting booth. And then there is full-spectrum practical politics, or engaging and taking down an opponent by any means necessary, using the rules, but never breaking the rules. But to do anything, we have to start with practical politics, and in this case, it's the art of staying on message. It's having a consistent message. And our consistent message is a mantra, or white rabbit genocide, you see on this front page. And we will also, in this podcast, engage in the geopolitical. We will talk about geopolitical events. We will talk about things from a unique white rabbit perspective. We will also go into white rabbit psychology and ecology and talk about everything you'd want to know about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. And this is, again, the Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. Let's go into the Egyptian rundown right off the top. We have Helter Skelter, we have Chaos, we have Pink Rabbits, we have an endgame, and we are picking up steam as these groups start making their moves. And in Egypt, we had a pretty interesting scenario. Zawi Hawass is someone my listeners know all about. He is Pink Rabbit, Bankster's, and Elitester point man in Egypt. He controls all the antiquities in Egypt. In fact, he put a gigantic fence around, an actual fence. Huge fence around the Giza, the actual Giza, the part of the Giza plateau that has a pyramid on it. It's called the Giza Complex. And he has a brand new big museum there. And the spotlight in the museum is King Tut, of course. And my listeners know all about him. Well, apparently a handful of their different museums were getting broke into. So all hell breaks loose, and he lets loose some crazy, crazy statement. Some crazy statement that I've gotten tons of emails over. He says, and this is how crazy the statement is. The statement is so crazy that the Wall Street Journal, all these major services carried the statement, and now I can't find the exact statement. My Wall Street Journal article actually mentions it, and you can look at my Twitter. It mentions red mercury, but it doesn't say his whole statement. He says something, the Egyptians are going crazy over red mercury. They think it's in the throat of the mummies. They think it's in the mummies' throat, so they're running around in the museums. This is the craziest statement anyone's ever heard from someone like him. And so I'm getting these emails. People ask me, why on earth is he talking about red mercury? Red mercury is pseudoscience, science fiction. It's also an alchemical reference. Most Egyptians don't even know what red mercury is. Most of the planet doesn't know what red mercury is. I mentioned it once or twice to my listeners. Anyone that's read Dr. Farrell, Joseph P. Farrell's books, The Philosopher's Stone, you're going to read about alchemy and the potential for red mercury and the different references, whether it be alchemical or otherwise. It's also called the Nazi serum, Texas gold, I think, or American gold. There's a handful of different references to this stuff, but the idea that he would come out and say something like that, what's going on, Horace? Keep getting these questions. What's your take on this? Well, what you have here is what you have here in Egypt is total chaos. When something like this is going on, it's sort of like a quasi-Velvet Revolution where they're starting to try stuff. They're starting to put their act together. They got the, I've been asked about this rider on a white horse. I didn't see it, the apparition. They're seeing UFOs and everything else. These are all hologram technology, in my opinion. I don't even have to see it. I can tell you, it's Team Pink Rabbit. They're putting their game together. The end game, what's their timeline? Their timeline is right now. They got their machine going. Once the machine's going, there's no dress rehearsals over, kids. You got to go. And so now you got all these pink rabbits running around. The problem with the pink rabbits in Egypt is this. Zawi Hawass, his whole entire antiquities team to move mummies. They're moving all this King Tut stuff. They're moving all this King Tut's family stuff. They're moving all this stuff in the new museum. This whole entire team, every time he moves something, he doesn't move anything. He's not allowed to. Yeah, Team Pink Rabbit has the French in there, and the French Antiquities team moves his stuff for him. If you'll see this on the Discovery Channel. Another problem he has is that the Egyptians have all kinds of equipment, but that equipment is owned generally by Siemens AG, or a German company, because let's face it, they don't make CAT scans, they don't make genetic testing equipment, they don't make this type of stuff. One of Zawi Hawass's complaints just in the last few days is that Egyptology, they're trying to make Egyptology more Egyptian. Because they got a bunch of Europeans in there handling everything. Well, he's just a point man. He's a point man for Pink Rabbit banksters and leasters. If you want into the Giza complex, if you want past that fence, you have to have his personal permission. And so after this big helter-skelter, after he makes this crazy statement, he gets promoted immediately to a cabinet post. Now, if you've watched this show, Chasing with Mummies, if he wants to do something up and beyond antiquities, if he wants to move something at large, if he needs something moved out of his way, he's got to go to a cabinet minister, he's got to go to someone higher up. Well, now he's a cabinet minister, and cabinet ministers, of course, probably have some type of control over elements of the military. Egypt is not a dictatorship, it's a military dictatorship, and now the military's taken over, and they're going to give it back to the people, so they say. But you're in the end game, so anything goes. Do I think September will happen, some big election? My gut feeling is no. No, they're making big moves. I don't think it's accidental that they start playing around with all this stuff in Egypt. But why all these crazy statements about Red Mercury? Why on earth would he make such a crazy statement? Well, in any type of big event like this, the rumors, and I'm guessing the rumors were fact, that the Mossad was on the ground, Saudi intelligence was on the ground, they're freaking out over this stuff, what's going on inside there. You've got the Russians on the ground, Russian intel. You have CIA, you have MI6, and the French intel. All these intelligence services are on the ground watching what Team Pink Rabbit does, and no one knows who's on anyone's side right now, to be honest with you. Team Pink Rabbit has been infiltrated nine ways to Sunday. And no one knows. I mean, you can only imagine. He's surrounded by Europeans, and he's a point man for Team Pink Rabbit, banksters and elitesters. They got him there to watch over all their antiquities. And this is their new world order, and he's playing a role. Now, is he some ancient cousin related to the Hyksos? We've discussed this before. There's no way to know. Is the House of Saud and Mubarak all related? Probably. You know, there's going to be a connection between these guys genetically. That's the only way you hold the group together. But he's there. He's doing his job. But his job can get pretty complicated all of a sudden if someone comes in there after something or someone freaks him out. So in any type of thing like this, well, let's step back for a minute. You're listening to Horace the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. In this podcast, I teach practical politics. Taught a whole lot of it in the beginning. But one of the basic things that you're getting down, whether you even realize it or not, is that we're using very plain language in a very unique way. Follow the white rabbit is a phrase that everyone's heard of that speaks the English language. They've heard this phrase. Very popular Alice in Wonderland. Horace the Avenger is a phrase all the Egyptians would have heard of. What is another phrase? White rabbits. We talk about the green goddess. Green goddess is something that, everyone's heard of a green goddess. But if you were walking down the street talking about these things, this is very common language, but no one would know what in the hell you're talking about. Because what we do is we're operating in an in-group, out-group type of thing. And when you can do this right in front of the world, most of the world will never figure it out. Your enemy is generally too slow to figure it out. Because when it comes down to something like this, and that's what Team Pink Rabbit does, they have a language of their own. But in a big event like this, ahead of time, they're going to have certain distress calls. They're going to have certain distress calls, and those distress calls could be like, Zawi Hawass is in trouble. And so Zaliha Wass makes it clear to several reporters and everyone in the area that, you know, falafels are bad on 51st Street. He ate a 51st Street falafel and that falafel was crappy or whatever. He had a bad carrot on 51st Street. You know, the Pink Rabbit is going to come out and say something like that. Now, that's a distress call. In other words, we don't know what on earth he's talking about. Just like if you're sitting at a party and you're talking to someone about this podcast, maybe they've listened to it, and you guys are having a conversation. You're using phrases they've heard before, but no one knows what on earth you're talking about. And I'm guessing some of you have had this happen. You have friends like, what the hell is this Follow the White Rabbit stuff? What's this green? What are you talking about? I mean, they've heard it before, but they don't understand what you're talking about. So you come up with a series of distress calls. And this was a very pre-planned event, so they would have distress calls. Now, a distress call is like, you know, I ate a bad carrot on 51st Street in Cairo. Well, no one's going to know what he's talking about. Maybe he had a bad carrot for lunch or a bad falafel sandwich. But that distress call then puts the word out that anyone allies to the Pink Rabbits are supposed to come and help him immediately. But you're going to have different levels of distress calls in something like this, whether it be, I guess you could call this a stage revolution. You're going to have a variety of different distress calls. This is kind of common sense because, hey, you can get in trouble. You can have a miscalculation. There's a lot of wild stuff going on here. Anything can happen. A museum could get broken into. Someone could be coming after something. You know, their whole New World Order is dependent on King Tut. We know that for a fact. And you got this whole section of characters that there's big question marks. You got Akhenaten, you got Akhenaten's sister, who is King Tut's mother. Then you got Akhenaten's mother, Queen Tai, who's rumored to be Hyksos, who's rumored to be major Neanderthal gene carriers, who's married to Imhotep. So, I mean, that's what they're talking about. They broke into KV-35, that's Queen Tai, all these different mummies. KV-55, that's King Tut. All these different things are up in the air, but, you know, no one knows what they're after or if it actually happened. It could have just been a big scare. But anyways, you're going to have certain distress calls. Makes sense? Something bad happens, you got to communicate that. And once you give out that distress call, in that particular area, someone's going to come to your aid. It could be someone from CIA, MI6, maybe you've got a buddy in French intelligence. Someone's going to come in there and figure things out and try to help you out. That's their job. That's what a distress call's for. Distress hand signals, sure, you could have a combination thereof. But the media carried this precise quote. The funny thing about this precise quote is that I can't find it in the Wall Street Journal piece I am looking at. I am looking at right now that I was going to read the direct quote of. It has been revised or something because you can read the thing and you will find it where he talks about there after Red Mercury, which is crazy to even have it in here. But at the same time, likely because the thieves were looking for gold or red mercury. But they left out his exact quote. They had in his exact quote, now they've taken it out. Why would they do something like that? I've been asked this question. They've been redacting this quote. They've been taking this quote out because it's most likely a distress call. I mean, I'm guessing for you, but does this make sense? You're not going to come out and say something that crazy unless it's an emergency, unless you want to get an attention. Why would you want to get an attention? Well, look at the place. You don't know what's going on. So something like this goes, you know, on top of that, he doesn't have a cabinet level position. Might they have been creating a problem to get a reaction, to get a solution? Yeah, maybe someone knew they were going to do that. Maybe someone knew they were going to do a minor break-in so they can post their boy to the cabinet position. You know, I mean, Mubarak's gone, but he's on the cabinet position. You got a military dictatorship. Why? So he can watch all the antiquities and everything else. I mean, they got an endgame going. Now, right now, it's going. Their timeline is right now. They got the machine in motion, and once you turn it on, all the rehearsal for 4,000 years or however long they've been at it, all this rehearsal, all that stuff is over. It's action time. You got to execute. You got to go. So maybe they were talking about a problem reaction solution. Maybe something got out of hand. Maybe he just freaked out. But that's in my opinion. It's no fancy meme or mantra he's putting out there, some alchemical mantra or something. No, someone next to me just said that's what Dr. Farrell was talking about. That is possible. If he did something crazy like that on Chasing Mummies, his television show, and then you see several news reporters repeat it and they keep repeating it, that's fine. But when you see something like crazy like that, unexplainable, after some big disaster, potential disaster, especially since he gets promoted to the cabinet position, I would expect that it was Panic at the Disco for Pink Rabbits, and he gave out a distress call. And that's what that is, a distress call. Something very apparent and over the top using their language. where you're supposed to go immediately to his aid. It doesn't matter where you're at or what you're doing, you immediately get to help him. Why wouldn't you? Someone just asked me, yeah, I got the peanut gallery here behind me, why wouldn't you call Rockefeller in New York? Because he's not in New York, idiot. He's in Cairo. He needs help today, right now. Get it there. You know, so that's my guess. Now, we don't know for sure. We don't know the whole story, but it is a wild thing to start talking about. Egyptians looking for bread mercury. Yeah, that's a Soviet phrase, actually. It's not the, I don't know. It is an alchemical, but again, if we're coming out with a mantra, this is something my audience members know quite well. If we're coming out with a mantra, and you got a friend in the newspaper, and the newspaper's gonna print the mantra, he's not gonna change it around. He's gonna keep printing it. So the ideal that I can't even find this quote. I've got several pieces here that had this quote, and I'm not seeing this whole quote anymore. I'm guessing it was some type of distress call, which is only normal. It's only natural. Get used to all this crazy stuff because it's going to get even crazier. But that's most likely what it was. Now, I don't know for sure, but saying the Egyptians are going crazy for red mercury, and you can even still derive it. He still says red mercury in this Wall Street Journal article. And then saying they think red mercury is in the throats of a mummies. He's not putting out some mantra to be repeated. That's a distress call. That's very coded language for, we got problems! It's panic at the disco! But it's very easy to panic in a big event like this when you start executing. It's very easy to, they're going to be nervous anyways because they got all kinds of problems. But that's my guess. Makes sense to you? Makes sense to you? But makes sense to me. That's the most logical answer is usually the simplest. They're using crazy language because it's some type of distress call. And what we know to be true is that there was some type of break-in. We don't know. He said nothing happened. They didn't take any mummies, but maybe they were just taking genetic samples for the mummies. Maybe they were after something. Maybe they were after something he didn't yet know about. Or maybe they were doing a problem reaction solution. They were going to do a mini break-in, freak out the and to get him a cabinet post, because that's what we know to be true. We know there was some type of break-in. We know that he got a cabinet post right afterwards. And we know that he, in between time, he let loose some crazy statement about Egyptians coming after red mercury. What is red mercury? Well, let me finish the same. Egyptians coming after red mercury, they think red mercury is in the throat of the mummies. This is some over-the-top statement, most likely, in between these events of this break-in and him getting a cabinet post, so most likely it was a big distress call. And it would have been heard loud and clear, because they responded with a cabinet post, and now he has military control. He was walking around with the military after this. You know, I seen him one time on cameras. He was standing in front of he was standing in front of a museum with no military, and after he gets his cabinet post, he's walking around with the military, but it's a military dictatorship. What about Mubarak stepping down? I wouldn't pay attention to any of this stuff. Keep on message. Keep your eye on the prize. I'll entertain you in the anecdotes, but it is nothing complicated. If it was something sophisticated, alchemical mantra he's putting out, because, well, you're dealing with red mercury, you're dealing with the potential for an alchemical reference. If he's putting out something sophisticated, they're going to keep repeating the exact same thing. You're not ever going to break message. You're not ever going to go off message. The fact that you're not ever going to hear this thing again, I can't even find the whole quote in the Wall Street Journal. Tells me that it was exactly what I thought it was. Most likely. Because what do we know to be true? We know there was a break-in. We don't know what happened in the break-in. We know that he gives out some crazy statement. Then we know he gets a cabinet post. Okay. If you want to touch Egyptian antiquities, well, you got to go through him. But the fact of the matter is, he's surrounded by French. You don't know what these teams are about. Once it comes crunch time, you don't know what's been inserted there. He's got Siemens AG there running all kinds of stuff for genetic testing. You don't know what that technician's about. He may have been put there 7, 8 years for something at the right time. Don't know. You don't know until someone makes a move. But it wouldn't be the first time they created a problem to get a reaction, to get a solution. They tried to do something cute and got whapped. It wouldn't be the first time. But he says they didn't make off with anything major. They didn't make off with any gold or anything else. Now, if they're a bunch of Beydoons, why would Beydoons be interested in red mercury when they can grab gold? I hate to tell you this, but King Tut has some gold around. You know, he's bling bling, as the black rabbits say. None of it makes any sense. But what does make sense is that it was some type of distress call and it got answered. You know, or maybe he just freaked out. Anytime you're executing something that you've been preparing for a long time, well, you can get pretty spooked pretty easily. especially if you're surrounded by all those intelligence services and you don't know who, what, where, when, or how. Would he know who come to help him out? Absolutely not. That's how that's supposed to work. You give out a distress call, someone comes and helps you out. But you're dealing with in-group, out-group languages, where they're using phrases that are, well, and this phrase is very uncommon to all but a handful of people. All but a handful of people on this globe have even read about Red Mercury. So I've talked about it some in this podcast. You can look it up. I don't want to spend a long time into it. I'm sure our Dr. Farrell will have something to say on it because it is something that would catch his ears. Red Mercury. It's something he's written about. Alchemy is something he knows about. An Egyptian would be influential in that particular segment. But no, if it was something specific that he wanted repeated, they would keep repeating it. Common sense. If he would also, it would be a lot different. This is just too much weird stuff going on. So although we don't know for sure, that's my particular opinion on that. Egypt's down, and we'll see as this game picks up speed in the spring, and it will be picking up speed. I was asked a fascinating question, and I'm going to answer it because I don't think I've answered this. This particular podcast, we are going to the wild side. This is a two-part series. We are going back into Nazi Never Never Land. We're going into the wild side. We're going beyond the wild side. And so I'm going to answer all the crazy questions you sent in that you keep on telling me to answer because, believe it or not, I don't think I'd have 20% of my listeners if I didn't talk about this stuff. There's a big, big audience for this stuff. But we're going to talk about things in this podcast from a different angle. And I was asked a question, very interesting question, by a Christian lady, a Christian listener. Nothing wrong with that. Horace the Avenger, I've been dying to ask you. It seems like this war with Iran or some big war is shaping up. Yes, that's my opinion. That's the event I look for. In your opinion, do you think if this red hippopotamus is here, and he would be some anti-rabbit, and he would come out before the war? Well, it's kind of a crazy question. Is the red hippo real? The pink rabbits are real. Yeah, the biggest gaggle of pink rabbits we've ever seen is these little Jew rabbits. At least they're elites. And everything they got going on, the Zawi Hawassas and everything else. Then we got the pink rabbit banksters. They're real. The Rothschild and Rockefeller. Then we got the pink rabbit elitesters. George Bushes. At best, they're traitors. At worst, they're related to the red hippo. And how would you know that if the red hippo came out and started yapping to the world? Would he come out before I am agnostic on this. This is what I would say. This is what I'll tell you. I am agnostic. I don't know what I believe, but when I see it, I'll know it. If he comes out on TV, would he come out before the war if someone flushes him out? If someone flushes him out. You say you're a big Star Wars fan, and I'll explain to you exactly how this character is going to operate. He's going to operate like a Sith Lord. Anything's possible and anything's probable if something like that is here. I don't know if the red hippo's here. The pink rabbits are very real. The red hippo, you wouldn't know about a Sith Lord until he comes out. But your question is, if he comes out, would he stop the war? He would talk about love, peace, taco grease, social justice, the brotherhood of man, and he would cause the biggest war the world has ever seen since the last time he caused a huge war. This character would have also caused a huge war here before, too. Do I know that for a fact? Absolutely. In Star Wars, that's what the Sith Lord says, Republic, Republic, peace. It's the biggest war anyone's ever seen. That's how these guys operate. That's how he would operate. Could he come out before the war? Sure. Sure. I wasn't even thinking about that. I'm thinking of conventional things. I'm thinking of different military scenarios where an accident happens around Saudi Arabia, around the Gulf, having to do with Iran, but who knows? Who knows? If he's here and he's pressed for time and someone flushes him out, he will come out. Sure, sure, why not? How will he come out? Probably on TV, international TV. Will he have razzle dazzle? Absolutely. Absolutely. He'll scare, and pardon my French, man, but he will scare the shit out of you. He will scare the shit out. He won't do anything to scare you, but you'll know something's wrong with this guy. Now, next question you ask, could it be a hologram? Oh, possibly. Possibly a hologram. It would be the red hippo, and you would know it's the red hippo or red hippo hologram. What would he look like? I don't have any idea. Well, when you're dealing with this particular character, who we think it could be, he's big and white. But he has no interest. He has only an interest in us. You know, whether it be Pink Rabbit, Banksters, Elitesters, they've all been with us. They all look just like us. Your average little pink rabbit like Tim Weiss looks like us. It's only their Middle Eastern counterparts like Zahi Hawass and whatnot don't. But by and large, all the pink rabbits, the dangerous ones, look just like us. Just like the Tim Weisses. I mean, they're the most dangerous ones. White like me, as he says. So they're new man. Let me think about this. Their new man is actually isn't Asian. At least it hasn't been for the past eons. But the biggest growth group, let's break it down. Would he be white in the first round? Not in the first round. In the first round, I mean, if he comes out before the war, wild speculation. Let me do this here. Let me think out loud for the rabbits. This nice lady who emailed me, took the time to email me this crazy question. It's no more crazy than Christians here when the preacher's doing Revelation, so let's go into it. The biggest growing section of the world is mixed. And you see these people walking down the street, and I don't know whether they're from the Middle East, from South America, or North Africa, or, you know, I mean, there's a swath of this planet that's growing that is all mixed, or Turkey, or the edge of the Caucasus. There is a group that looks virtually identical. It's just whether or not they're different shades of beige to dark brown. But there are, they're new man. They're nameless, faceless new man. But in the first round, that would be the growing segment. Their new man has always been some blended humanity, coffee-colored. So I'm guessing that's maybe what he would look like. Even if it was a hologram, something like that. He's not going to be big. He's not going to be red hippo. He's not going to have horns on or anything like that. He'll come out like that, and he will scare the hell out of all the white nationalists because they'll think this is the Jew God he's over with. It's over with. It's curtain times for white rabbits, and you just need to bear in and hang on because the only reason he'd be coming out before the war is because something's flushed him out. Something's coming after him, and he's got to make moves. But one thing I'll tell you, go back to Star Wars. The fascinating thing about the Star Wars, and Clone Wars is always on, the Star Wars cartoon, and they got really, really a good script writer. Because in Star Wars, the Clone Wars, the cartoons, there's several different Siths. And one thing you know about the Sith is they don't have any loyalties. If you go into the Jew rabbits and you go into their elites, they don't have any loyalties. That's why they're so dangerous. They really don't have any loyalties. You think they're loyal to each other, and they are. Pink Rabbit banksters are loyal to bloodlines. Pink Rabbit elitesters are loyal to bloodlines. Zahi Hawass is most likely loyal. They're loyal to him because he's from some one of their ancient bloodlines or something. This is common sense. You can't hold something together without some type of blood genetic ties. Now, what they are, I've speculated on that before, but you would have to... He's not going to be, you know, the next question she asks is, would he actually defend Israel? No. The Sith Lord, one thing, all right, let's go into the Star Wars. In Star Wars, we have Count Dooku. And poor Count Dooku is the Sith Lord's apprentice. And Count Dooku does work for him year after year, does all this work for him, stages everything. It lies, cheats, steals, maneuvers, put things into place. The next thing you know, what does the Sith Lord do to Count Dooku? Does he reward him? No. He gets them killed. And that was by design. Yeah, in the cartoon, this happens all the time. The Sith set each other up. They kill off each other. They have no loyalties anywhere. In the cartoon, one of these ones, Count Dooku partners with this one group of rabbits, and he has them all wiped out. They have no loyalties. So it's kind of difficult to know what they're after until they get on top of you. But in this case, I can tell you what he's after. He's after white rabbits. What his whole intentions are? I don't know. It's kind of like, I think it's that... what is it, Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones? What you really want to know is the nature of my game? Yeah, you're in one of those scenarios where if you listen to the, I think it's the Rolling Stones, it's Sympathy for the Devil. I know the exact song. Yes. Please allow me to introduce yourself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. But like he says in the song, it's the... What you really want to know is the nature of my game. But what they're after, you never know it. You didn't know the Sith Lord was after Anakin Skywalker until he wipes out Count Dooku, or lets Anakin wipe him out. But these guys, something like that would have a few moves on you. The good news is something would be coming for him. The bad news is you'd freak out. But no, he wouldn't protect the Jews. He'd probably line them up and crucify them, especially like the Israelis and stuff like that. He has no... It would be probably a Count Dooku moment, and that would really freak out. That would really freak out a lot of people. So now you have, the red hippo comes out. You think these are his rabbits, these little pink rabbits out there in Israel, and in Foxy Foxman, and ends up just crucifying them. Well, you know, what's going on here? Well, they're just getting the game going. Hopefully it wouldn't be too confusing. Hopefully it wouldn't be too confusing. No, but anything can happen. Sure, if that's what you want to believe. If you want to think something, I'm kind of agnostic. I don't know what I believe until I see it, but it could happen before the war, could happen after. But if it happens before the war, although he'll act like maybe he's going to stop the war, but it'll be a Sith Lord moment where he causes the biggest war this planet's seen since the last time he caused a war. But this character only has an interest in white rabbits. Whether it be the Pink Rabbit, Elitesters, or Banksters, the only ones that have done it, the only ones that are dangerous to us, the ones that look just like us. And at best, they're traitors. At worst, well, we don't know. Something like that's here, well, you know, everything's off. But and I would expect a few more governments to get overthrown. I would expect chaos and pandemonium. But it wouldn't stop the war. It would just be a lot bigger, a lot wilder. And we will keep this conversation going. But I answer all questions on this show. No matter how crazy they are, I answer them. If I can't answer them quickly, yes, no, or maybe, 98% of all questions, I answer them one way or shape or another. And that's probably the most direct question I've ever answered. But, yeah, if you see some guy come on your TV, and you'll damn well know it. You'll know that this is a red hippo, something's gone wrong here, something's wrong here, this is what Horace talked about. You would know it immediately. Any healthy white rabbit would know it. Whether or not they keep their wits about him is another story. And he'll talk love, peace, taco grease, social justice, sharing, who knows? A basic language that you've heard, well, our enemy talking those terms. The Jew rabbit's talking these terms all the time. And then he'll cause the biggest war you've ever seen. And don't be surprised if the Jew rabbits get wiped out in the first, if he doesn't pull a Count Dooku moment with them. He has one interest and one interest only. His survival. Something's flushed him out. Something's coming for him, and he wants us for something. What would he want us for? Well, we've talked about this before. I could speculate no end. He needs us. We don't need him. He needs us. You know, but we'll keep this conversation alive. And in the next up, we're going to talk about money. We're going to talk about money, and I'm going to go into Dr. Farrell, and I'm going to answer some UFO-type questions. But to answer whether or not I'm a UFOologist, no. No, I don't even know any UFOologist. Dr. Farrell has said he's not a UFOologist either. I assume they're generally government stuff. But as far as these craft they say they're seeing over the Temple Mount, these UFOs are seeing over the Temple Mount, the rider on the horse going through the crowds that freak people out in Egypt, I haven't seen it on video yet. This is most likely some type of holographic technology. A lot of people have it. A lot of different parties have it, some more sophisticated than others. How would they do a hologram? Well, you're not dealing with a ground-based laser hologram, most likely. Most likely you'd be dealing with something satellite-based. And they're launching satellites right, left, and center on this planet. So we'll keep this conversation alive, and we'll get going on to the money, and then we're going to be heading into back into all kinds of crazy subject matters. I'm going to throw in an update before we go into the next section. Many items, and I'll put up a news release. This was done on, just right after I got done talking and doing the previous section there. King Tut statue among the missing Egypt treasures. And so they're doing an inventory, and they are finding things missing, and it's all from the Amarna period. Now, this is King Tut. This is Nefertiti, which there's a statue of her missing, and various different things from this particular dynasty that we don't know a lot about because the Egyptians wiped it out. They hated it so much. Akhenaten was a renegade pharaoh who basically overthrew everything and overturned. They were worshiping the old pre-dynastic god of Amun, and they basically overturned all that and created a lot of chaos in Egypt and went to a monotheistic religion. He's almost like a Bolshevik. But anyways, we know now that things from King Tut were missing, and everything's speculation until we know facts for sure, but based on what we do know, it seems like that was just some wild distress call, which would make sense because our whole entire New World Order, whether it be the Grand Egyptian Pyramid, and these are a Grand Egyptian Museum, largest museum built in the world right now, all these things coming together have something to do with a Pink Rabbit New World Order. And is this the one, would this be the New World Order the Jew rabbits are in on? Well, I think, yes, I believe a good portion of them at least. The groups is a little more diverse than we would like to think. I wish it would be simple as black and white, but it isn't. And I'll talk about pink rabbits again in the beginning of the next MP3 as we start talking about different types of answering your questions regarding different types of new technology people are believed to be rolling out. But there are things missing. Zawi Hawass is covering for that. They're trying to figure out exactly what happened, what was done. It's from a critical time period that is their New World Order is based on. We don't know what's up with these guys. King Tut was, at worst, part European, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. At best, he maybe looked like a little white kid. I have no idea. But one thing is, one thing I can tell you, and I've said this before, anytime our enemy promotes anything Aryan, you better look out. There's always something wrong with the picture. And, of course, it always goes back to the Hyksos, and that is one of the big question marks we have. And I went through this before. I broke it down for you before, but we're still on the same discussion, really. But things are picking up steam. And I've been asked, do I think they're going to overthrow Berlusconi in Italy? If it's part of the endgame plan, he would probably be in on it. You know, Mubarak seemed kind of clueless, but we would think some of these guys would be in on it. Zawi Hawass certainly knew what was going on to a certain extent. I mean, he had a distress call of some type. And certain things, and big things happened once he gave it out. You know, but or whatever, whoever he was talking to, this particular message he sent out. But I don't particularly know for sure. I don't have their playbook. Their playbook, I call it the Big Bamboozle. It's a series of events, that will be ongoing over the next X many weeks, and this series of events will set up things. What we call the Big Bamboozle. Now, where it goes is anyone's guess. I've been asked about Putin. Putin has given a go-ahead to show Kasparov and Nemtsov on TV. Nemtsov, N-E-M-T-S-O-V. He's a Jewish boy over there. He's part of the neocons like him, and they would like to move him into power. Well, a lot of people would like to move him into power among the American elite, especially among the pink rabbits. That's the pink rabbit on the spot in Russia, besides Kasparov, is Nemtsov. Do I think any of these guys have a chance? If they would have had a chance, they would have had it long ago. I mean, you could always go down something, always go down the road and say that there's something out there that we don't see, you know, a super high-powered antichrist that comes out. And I would hope he'd keep it simple and be totally anti-white and let's just get it on and get it over with, because then we know what God looks like, right? So we could always go down that angle. Until you see that, I guess you never know. But, you know, you get into this question with Kartakovsky and all the mixed messages on, I mean, they just buried the guy. They buried the guy, and I told you they're not going to, he's got an iron fist on things. I don't see him, rendering control unless there's something we don't see, you know, the super high powered antichrist. Or, you know, he lets Nemtsov, run the government, the government falls and he lets Nemtsov and Kasparov run it for a day, then Jesus comes and cuts their heads off or something. But you're in the end game, so I expect to see some turbulence. But in the next section, we're going to go into money. I'm going to talk about money again, and we're going to start talking about answering some questions on my opinions on Dr. Farrell and different things that have come out. But we're going to go to a break now. But hopefully that answers those questions, and I will keep this story about King Tut and this museum stuff and this... as these events go, I expect there to be a surprise, and this may have been a big surprise for them. Someone may have lifted something. As their new order collects artifacts, well, there's another party out there collecting artifacts too. And so that could very well be. That's just common sense. If they're going to have museums full of artifacts documenting their history, well, someone out there looking out for white rabbits is going to have museums, and we have all kinds of museums full of artifacts, but maybe after something to document our history. I don't really know. The fact that a statue of Nefertiti was missing, well, we'll see. I'm interested in exactly what went on there, why this guy made this crazy call about red mercury. But like I said, you keep it simple. It's most likely a distress call, which is very common in these in something big and something big like that that can easily get out of hand, or different parties can come out of nowhere and come after stuff. And I will keep you on top of the situation as best I can. And now a word from our sponsor. Have you ever said to yourself, "Gee, I would love an undercover lover," or maybe you said to yourself, "Gee, I would like to be an undercover lover"? We know exactly how you feel. For a limited time only, on WhiteRabbitRadio.net, you can buy an undercover lover. You can be an undercover lover. Yes, for only 25 carats. It is a great investment because all the money goes to fight white rabbit genocide, which is the thing we're about here at WhiteRabbitRadio.net. So if you're looking for an undercover lover, or if you're looking to be an undercover lover, or if you're just looking to have the coolest undercover lover in the history of the undercover lovers, we have just the ticket for you, all at a very, very low price. Yeah, so hop on over there and pull up that merchandise tab. And when you see the undercover lover, you'll go wild at how beautiful it is. And hit that buy button. Support fighting white rabbit genocide in the easiest way possible. Be an undercover lover. Now we're going to get into a question and answer. And these question and answers, this is going to go a little bit to the wild side, but we're going to start out with a direct question about money and private central banking, something I've discussed, the difference between private central banking and a government issuing a true currency and the current scenario between the U.S. and China being the largest government-backed central bank issuing currency debt-free, and America being the largest Federal Reserve System, being the largest private central bank, which issues which loans U.S. federal notes into circulation or issues debt as a currency. And this is an ongoing conversation. I'm asked directly about Dr. Farrell. Let me pull up what this person's asking. Let's go to Giza Death Star. Giza Death Star. This is Dr. Farrell's website. They're talking about Giza Death Star. Let's see what's going on here. Holy moly. He's had a makeover. It looks like he got attacked by WordPress. Yes. Is this a WordPress site? Probably is. Yes, I think it looks familiar to me. But anyways, it looks like Dr. Farrell's been busy. Good God. Yes, he got attacked by a WordPress monster. The Green Goddess smacked his website around a little bit. Let's see here. He's got videos. He's in a cowboy hat. His website is GizaDeathStar.com. They're asking me a precise question. Have I heard him? I've listened to his Babylonian Bankster series. That's available on the Byte Show. And if you like it, you should send them a couple dollars because nothing there is free. That lady has to back up everything herself or put up everything herself. She's dependent on donations. They don't ask for it really too much they don't demand you send them money to download something, but by and large, it's not a free-for-all. If you like something on the Byte Show, you like any of the Farrell series or any of her other series, you should at least send her whatever you can if you can afford something. She just doesn't sound like the type of person to take money from someone that can't afford something. But commenting on Dr. Farrell, yes, I've covered this before, and he does a very, very good job of explaining things. That is probably one of his best subject matters because he reduces down to very simple language, which is how it should have been explained. I've heard about this stuff before. This conversation is nothing new about this. This conversation is nothing new. Now, in regards to his particular show on Whitley Strieber's Dreamland, the link, well, it's no longer, you got to be a paid subscriber to listen to it from the looks of things right here. So, no, I can't listen to it. I'm not a paid subscriber. But by and large, I can answer your question about counterfeiting because this is something I've never covered. I don't know what he's saying about counterfeiting, other than that's one of the MOs of the Pink Rabbit Banksters and Leadsters. So let me give a brief overview of my particular opinion or an updated opinion on this. When you lay out the history as he lays it out in Babylonian Banksters, his type of thinking in the book Babylonian Banksters, is that this group, the Pink Rabbit Banksters, for lack of a better word, go back a long ways. And their view of money is one of the sources of their power. The view of money, my interest in it is how it went to fund social engineering. It's all tied in together. In his particular case, this person's asking me about World War II. They're asking me about whether or not do I believe they went to war with Hitler over money. Yes, just not in the way you think. Hitler started he started those labor certificates. He started issuing a true German currency into circulation debt free, and that caused a big brouhaha with all of his Anglo partners, Jew and Gentile alike. Jew and Gentile. We've talked about this. The Pink Rabbit Banksters, the Leadsters. Well, the Jews were already anti-Hitler because they declared war on him and he declared war on them. But by and large, the big falling out was over money, over his issuing those labor certificates. And he did so very successfully. That came from someone on his team had the name of Fader, F-A-D-E-R, and Dr. Farrell was very correct on this. It's like Heinrich or Himmrich or something like that, excuse me. I've never read the book, but the book goes either back into the 13 colonies issuing colonial script or Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln financed the Civil War with greenback dollars. And greenback dollars, or whatever he was issued, I want to say it was greenback dollars, were issued directly by the U.S. government, directly by the U.S. Treasury debt-free. They went around the banksters, in other words, the Pink Rabbit Banksters and the Leadsters have had people run around them. But there's a long line of bodies. The last one that did it prior to China would have been JFK, John F. Kennedy, in 63 or 64, maybe it was 62. Issued treasury notes directly from the treasury. In other words, a true currency against GDP, against goods and services and productive capacity of the country. They don't have to issue it. It doesn't have to have an interest. It can be issued at 0% interest because it's issued as a receipt. They're not issuing it as a debt, But he got shot in the head. So you got Abraham Lincoln issuing a true currency, getting shot in the head. You have Hitler, who basically resurrected Germany over 36 months from the graveyard by issuing a true currency. You have a lot of action going on around this particular premise, around this particular ideal. And in the American Revolution, this is what the main revolution was about. It was about money. There were some other factors, but it wasn't about the Tea Party. Benjamin Franklin himself, Benjamin Franklin himself talks about this. In fact, I can pull up the exact quotes. And then there's a series of quotes when Ben Franklin comes back from England talking about that the 13 colonies were issuing colonial script. During a visit to Britain in 1763, the Bank of England asked Benjamin Franklin how he would account for the newfound prosperity in the colonies. Franklin replied, "That is simple. In the colonies, we issue our own money. It's called colonial script. We issue it in proper proportion to the demands of trade and industry." In other words, he issues it against GDP of the little colonies to make the products pass easily from producer to consumers. In this manner, creating for ourselves our own paper money, we control its purchasing power and we have no interest to pay to no one. Interesting, huh? Of course, in response, British Parliament passed the Currency Act of 1764, and I'm very precise on that date. I have it in front of me. And this act made it illegal for the colonies to print their own money and force them to pay all future taxes to Britain in silver or gold. And so the Franklin said, quote, "The colonies would have gladly borne a little tax on tea and other matters had it not been that England took away from the colonies their money, which created unemployment and dissatisfaction. In 1 year, the conditions were so reversed that the era of prosperity ended and a depression set in to such an extent that the streets of the colonies were filled with unemployed," quote. These are exact quotes from Benjamin Franklin. I can send them to you. So this is nothing new, that big wars happen when you start issuing your own currency. The Pink Rabbit Banksters don't like that. The Red Hippo is going to attack. That's why I know there's going to be action in China. They're going to have to change that. There's going to have to be an internal revolution. Something's going to have to give. Because it doesn't matter whether you're JFK, Adolf Hitler, Abraham Lincoln, Benjamin Franklin, or Chinese. You put up a public central bank, you start issuing your own currency debt-free against GDP, and you're looking for action, it seems like to me. So I don't think it's much of extrapolation or speculation. I mean, granted, we don't know 100%. We don't know all the ins and outs. But by and large, you can put it together. It's right in front of your face. That's their major control mechanism. It's not money, but how it's issued. How it's issued. They want a private central bank that issues a currency, that issues debt into circulation. And it's a system based on scarcity because the amount of money in circulation doesn't matter whether it's gold or treasury notes, the amount of Federal Reserve notes in circulation will always be scarce in lieu of the currency. In other words, in lieu of the interest. The interest on the Federal Reserve notes is going to always outpace the number of notes in circulation. In other words, it's a system based on scarcity. It's a system that everything they do revolves around scarcity and conflict. Or as old Bob would call it, old Bob Whitaker, being an economist, calls it a system based on shortages. It's a system designed for shortages. Because the number of notes in circulation is never going to match up with the interest on the notes. It's because of the compound nature of interest. It's because you're loaning money into circulation. You're loaning notes into circulation instead of issuing a true currency against GDP. Now, as far as do I think that ancient Egypt lasted for thousands and thousands of years prior to the first and second dynasty, simply because of the monetary system, yes. Yes, based on Babylonian banksters, this book that this person says they've read, and they're listening to all of Dr. Farrell's stuff on this particular subject, you will come across the Peloponnesian War against Sparta and the other, this internal war in Greece. And Sparta, basically, it held out against the bullion brokers or the banksters. The pink rabbit banksters were basically in the bullion up until 100 years ago or so. And they basically held out for 1,000 years or something along those lines. So I believe he's 100% correct. I think that's what history will show it as. I think once World War III, which has already started, the fur is getting ready to fly on this one. Once it's said and done, you might find out that the Pink Rabbit Banksters are a little bit, the Pink Rabbit Banksters and Leasters are a little bit broader group than we think. You know, we always like to say it's just the Jews. Well, they're involved, but it's going to be a little bit broader than that. But their main weapon on this side, and that's what they all agree on, is this private central banking. I mean, Jew, Gentile, like, this is at the top, especially at the top of Anglosphere. All the Western countries have private central banks. That's why they have so much debt. That's one of the problems. Now, Germany happens to manage theirs quite well. But, of course, they have some problems in doing so. They have some challenges in doing so. And it should be interesting to see how they extricate themselves. But that's one of the reasons I know there's conflict coming to China. Is that anytime you resurrect a public central bank and start issuing currency against GDP debt-free, issuing currency not as debt but as a receipt, it seems to me you're looking for action. The 13 colonies stumbled onto something. They stumbled onto something, apparently, most think, because of the shortage of gold and silver. There was a shortage of that, so we'll just issue colonial script. It was wildly successful. And they didn't want to let the pink rabbit banksters and leasers cannot let anything like that out of the box. Hitler made history with it. And that would have obviously, if had Hitler been allowed to continue, it would have spread around the world, because Hitler, of course, took over Europe. It would have spread around the world, this system of banking. That, of course, would be the end of their power. If you can't control the way money is issued, forget about the money. If you can't control the way it's issued, well, your control in the media, all your other control is really based on that. All their control is based on this. So it's very important to understand, and he does it very well. Now, as far as I've never heard him speculate on, he must do this in this particular Whitney Strieber's Dreamcast or Dreamland. You're asking me about what's my view on counterfeiting. Let me explain something to you right now. That is one thing that is always, in fact, going back, I can jump around on this subject because I know a little bit about it. Just recently, and I'll put up news reports. If you look up Chinese yuan, now the Chinese have themselves a true currency. It's issued against GDP. It's debt-free. They don't have any debt. It's wonderful. No wonder they're growing, right? Now, if you look up Chinese yuan counterfeit, Chinese yuan counterfeit Chinese yuan, just look it up and look at all the news reports going back over the last 15 years, especially over the last 10. Especially over the last five. 2008, they had a huge bust, 300 million in fake Chinese yuan. That doesn't sound like a lot to my listeners, but in Chinese yuan, that's a hell of a lot of money. One of the larger counterfeiting efforts going on this planet on some level is against the Chinese yuan, but that is one of their MOs. They always counterfeit. In America, we had this happen to the even the wampum. The Indians had wampum, and wampum was a stable unit of exchange for 300 years because no one was counterfeiting them. There was counterfeiting effort against wampum. Now, is this all related to pink rabbit banksters and leasers? By and large, I mean, I would extrapolate that, yes. It's part of their crew. One of the easiest ways to kill a currency is the counterfeiting. Abraham Lincoln and the greenback dollars, you can look up the phrase, I don't give a damn about greenback dollars. Those damn, whatever he issued, I want to say it's greenback dollars, that were heavily counterfeited. So this is always something that's around. You get death, you get destruction, you get war, and you get a lot of counterfeiting. But if you look up Chinese yuan counterfeiting, we don't have to really extrapolate in the past. You can look right now and understand there are two groups in China. they're kind of going at it. They're kind of, one group has screwed over the other, in my opinion. In my opinion, the Chinese and the Japanese is a group there at work together, and they're going to screw over the angle of the American elites hard. That's my opinion. That they're in it with the Germans or whatnot. But this is speculation. But I don't think you have to speculate on all these coincidences. The Chinese yuan is a heavily, heavily counterfeiting currency, and they're always fighting counterfeits. You can look it up. It's on their wiki. It's all over the place. You can very easily Google stuff this day and time on, you know, Chinese yuan counterfeit efforts, counterfeit Chinese yuans, and find out, because they are one right in front of our face. They got the largest. They print their own money. They issue currency against GDP debt free. That gets the red hippo's attention. The easiest way to destroy the Chinese yuan and its value historically would have been the counterfeiting, because if you counterfeit it, the people lose faith in the currency. It's kind of common sense. But I think that goes back a long ways. If you're saying that counterfeiting always goes hand to hand with the red hippo and the pink rabbit banksters and leechers, I would agree with that. There tends to be a lot of coincidences, whether it be death or counterfeiting, and I would have to believe that death, destruction, and counterfeiting when it comes to putting up one of those banks. Yeah, you got to do banking their way, and they don't care. Once you do banking their way, they don't care who runs anything else. They don't care who runs the media. Sooner or later, they're going to own the media. They don't care who's running big business. Sooner or later, they're going to own big business. It's kind of common sense, isn't it? But I agree with, if you get nothing else from Dr. Farrell, if you forget about anything else, this is not hocus pocus or speculation. This is raw. We always hear it's about money, but no one ever goes into detail. And it's very simple, and he does a very good job of explaining it. Does a very good job. There's only a handful of people that'll talk about this type of stuff in public, and he will. He will, but that's why they attacked Hitler. They didn't attack Hitler for killing Jews. I think you're going to conclude that yourselves in the coming months. They didn't attack Hitler for killing Jews. I don't even think the Jewish elites too much care about them. But I'm not saying the average Jew on the street or didn't rally or mobilize against Nazi Germany because of what he was doing to Jews. I sit neither here nor there or that. But the top of that group attacked him, came together and attacked him for one reason alone. The way they were doing business, the way they issued those labor certificates into circulation as a true currency, and it was debt free. An hour of work gets an hour of pay. You're issuing a receipt against the goods and services and productive capacity of the Germans. When you do that, you're looking for action on this planet. When the Chinese have done it, you're looking for action. The first thing they're going to do is probably counterfeit it. Try to destroy the confidence in the money. Second thing they're going to do is they're going to attack you. They're going to attack you. They're going to break you. But anyways, if Hitler would have been able to succeed, that would have spread all around the globe. But that was his big falling out with the industrial components, elements of the industrial components, because I think some of them sat on the other side of the fence, like Henry Ford. I don't know that Henry Ford necessarily disagreed with Hitler's view of money or Feder's view of money, this German that basically told them, you know, how Abraham Lincoln financed, they figured out how he financed the revolution, the Civil War so fast, and they also figured out what the colonies were doing to be so successful so fast. So they were just duplicating it. They got it from America, interesting enough. Now, anytime you try to wrestle control from this group, typically there's a lot of death and destruction. In regards to Kennedy, I think there's a lot of people that wanted him dead for various reasons. But, of course, if you issue your own currency, if you issue real notes from the Treasury, debt-free against America GDP, that's not going to work. It's not going to work. And I'm guessing that's never been rescinded. They just ignore it. Yeah, it would have been in the early 60s. But, yeah, he's 100% right on that. Now, I don't know for sure on every counterfeiting effort on the Chinese yuan, but I'd be willing to bet lots of money. There's too many coincidences with this stuff, and it is a relevant topic of conversation, because if it wasn't for this control, it makes the social engineering, all the garbage they do, possible, because it finances it. They are financed through debt. They are financed through debt of our blood. Our blood finances them. And of course, the question is regarding America, well, in America, personal debt is skyrocketing. It's the nature of the beast. There's non-conforming debt and conforming debt. Student loans would be a great type of conforming debt. Non-conforming debt could be, actually hospital bills can be non-conforming debt. A lot of people have to go bankrupt because they don't have insurance and they have big hospital bills. Non-conforming debt, of course, is credit cards. If they calculate so many Americans going broke, one thing that's hurt them is you have a lot more non-Europeans in America, and non-Europeans don't hesitate to go broke a lot quicker than the average white American is not going to really always pay their bills, even if they're in debt up their eyeballs. You're going to be paying your bills. You're going to be paying them on time. That's how white Europeans operate. They obey the law. Non-Europeans, they've gotten in trouble. The Mexicans don't care. They'll buy something, they'll go back to Mexico. They've had a huge problem with this. And they changed the bankruptcy laws, making it a little bit harder to go bankrupt. And since I haven't went bankrupt in the past, under the laws, I don't really know. But I know it used to be a lot easier. Now it's become a little bit more difficult. But basically, non-conforming debt, if they didn't want to issue non-conforming debt, they wouldn't issue it. So why are they issuing all this debt? Probably to keep the place afloat, because they know there's going to be a percentage that doesn't pay it back. In fact, right now, they know there's going to be a great percentage, because you don't have to. It's non-conforming. Now, conforming debt, student loans, which is a big scam, it's a huge scam, that's another story. You can't get out of those in bankruptcy, but I am not an expert on the difference between conforming and non-conforming and what all applies to non-conforming and what all applies to conforming. I know about medical bills for non-conforming, meaning you can go belly up and erase it. I know about credit cards, but they wouldn't extend credit cards to every man, woman, and child and three dogs. They have it figured in that a certain percentage are going to go belly up, and they don't really care because most white Americans always pay their bills. They've always taken advantage of this. This goes way back into Europe. We obey the law. Yeah, my race is guilty of one thing, obeying the law. And the laws are designed to kill us. But by and large, if they were worried about it, they would ask for collateral. You know, you can issue a credit card. American Express or some of these companies can issue a credit card and say, look, it's not non-conforming. You're going to have to back it with collateral. You're going to have to let us look at your checking account. You know, if you can't pay it, we're coming after you. You know, we're going to it'll be like student loans or something. They could do that. They don't want to. I don't want to. This group has been running a racket for a long time. I've come to the conclusion that for my race to be even with them, we would have to each be issued a credit card. About $100 million. Seriously. All right. Yeah, let's make it $100 million. And I'm going to be over the top with this because this is how I really view the situation after looking at their history. And I mean really looking at it. We would have to be each issued a credit card. All white rabbits across the planet each get issued a credit card. For $100 million in the rabbit hole you're in. And when you're done with that $100 million, you ring a bell, you go bankrupt, you live high on the hog, you go bankrupt. In other words, you just turn in your credit card and you go to another rabbit hole. And as soon as you get to another rabbit hole, you get a new credit card. We would have to all do this, play this cycle, probably at a minimum 2,000 years, most likely 4,000 years, just to be even with them. I mean, in other words, Horace Devengers gets a credit card in America for $100 million. I tap out here, I ring a bell, and I go over to Germany, I get another $100 million. Now, we keep doing that, playing games, country to country. Yeah, well, we're white rabbits, we get free credit cards. That's what the pink rabbit banksters and leechers have been doing. And then they consolidate power when they ring the bell and leave. It's a big game, and there's a lot of people in on it. That game has become problematic, though. That game has become problematic because too many people see it. Too many people have studied this stuff. If I know about it, obviously a whole lot of others know about it. If the Dr. Farrells are talking about it, a whole lot of others have known about it for a long time. That's their key power. And your strength can always be used against you as a weakness. They've let America go way too far in this attempt to get their new world order. We've talked about that too. But all things are flawed, and usually your biggest weakness will be your biggest strength. Yeah, my race's biggest strength is individualism. My race's biggest weakness became individualism. Once your enemy studies you, they're going to know your weakness. Our enemy's weakness is this banking system, believe it or not. In a certain time, in a certain place, they are very vulnerable, like right now in America. The lender of last resort problem, we've went into that before, but I think he's 100% right on that, and if you get nothing else out of the good doctor, it's that. And as far as the Giza Death Star, his new website, it looks spectacular. I'll have to watch his videos and see what he's saying, but everything he says is generally put into books, and I read the books. Now, I haven't read his book about the assassination of Kennedy, but one of the reasons I like Dr. Farrell is because if you're covering the topics I'll cover, if you're covering, let's say, UFOs, well, in Roswell and the Reich, I'm going to learn everything there is to know about UFOs and get all his sources. He just basically cleans house. So if you want to learn about the death of Kennedy, My guess is his approach will be to indict. It was a lot broader than one group or another, that there were several different groups coinciding that wanted Kennedy gone. That's probably what he's going to say, and then he's going to. But it is by and large speculation. Alternative news and research is all speculation. We don't know the future. The past has been so convoluted, and so many lies have been told that we're just putting it together. But I'm guessing that's one of the reasons I like Dr. Farrell, is because he'll take a subject like that. If I got to talk about the assassination of Kennedy, I can go through his book and find out what everyone has said on the subject. Not just what he says, but he's going to take apart what everyone said, all the major quote-unquote conspiracy theorists. And I haven't read it yet. I probably will in the future because I read all his stuff, just see what he has going on. But it's not something that totally interests me, but I do believe there's probably more parties involved than just one or two. In other words, it's not just the mob. It's not just, the Jews. It's not just, or as he claims, probably Nazi International or something. It's going to be a whole lot of people, most likely, is what he's saying or alluding to. And on Giza Death Star, of course, yeah, it's a fine-looking website, brand-new website. Go pay him a visit. Go buy him dinner, he's saying. And if you listen to him on the Bite Show, buy her dinner, too. We don't want them starving to death, by any means. And what's funny is on Giza Death Star, the good Dr. Farrell, he has a halo above his head in the upper left hand. Underneath the date, there's a picture of him with a halo above his head. I wonder if he designed that. I think he's trying to tell us something. Seriously, look at the picture. He's sitting there with the single finger pose, and he's got the halo over his head. That's funny stuff. But no, his books are good because he covers everyone in that particular area in his sources. In other words, instead of talking about in the crazy pyramid books, instead of talking about 100 sources, you can use one source and talk about those 100 sources. And for someone like me, that's a great gift because, well, I'm kind of lazy, and two, a lot of those guys are. It's far-flung stuff, and some of the research he gets his hands on is just not inexpensive to come across. But I'll address more of the question. I'll address more of Dr. Farrell's questions later on regarding alternative news and research. Crazy topics. We'll go into some crazy topics after this. And now a word from our sponsors. Horace, what can I buy to become the life of the party besides the Undercover Lover T-shirt? That's a question we always get asked. Well, you can always get yourself an Undercover Lover or a Green Goddess or a White Rabbit Radio Beer Stein. Yes, they've been reported to magically fill up on their own. Yeah, parties are just reported to overflow with beer. It's amazing. Amazing product, all for the very low cost of $23.99. Yes. And if you have problems getting up in the morning, you can always get yourself a White Rabbit Radio, Green Goddess, or Undercover Lover coffee mug. It'll help you wake up faster. Yeah, this stuff is reported to work very, very well. And those are all for the low price of $15. And all the proceeds go to support our servers. So if you're having problems becoming the life of the party, get yourself a beer stein. You're having problems getting up in the morning? Well, put yours truly in front of you. In front of you as you drink your morning coffee. And now back to our regular programming. Now we're going to move on, and I'm going to talk about Doc Farrell and Dr. Farrell's books and answer some questions a little more directly. I've alluded to this stuff before, but let me get very directly into it. Question directly about Reich of the Black Sun. Many of the white nationalists or even paleoconservatives have written me saying that they've started reading his books, and they like him talking a little bit better than they like what they read. And they've asked some questions about it, and I've got a group of questions. I'm going to go into a discussion. Reich of the Black Sun was critical for alternative news and researchers. That segment for one particular point, one particular reason. I've alluded to this before, but let me say so directly. He is taking on one of the major myths our enemy has brought out, and that has to do with Roswell. He's taking it head on. What he's doing is saying that there's no evidence that any aliens landed at Roswell. He says so convincingly, much more so in person than in the book. The book was just a teaser. But what you have to understand, and let me go backwards and forwards answering these questions and come back around to this, is that our enemy was very, very successful the last half of this century. So successful in this type of social engineering that had they had their New World Order, they wouldn't have to worry about any of their other failures in, let's say, the 80s. I put up a piece about Bob Whitaker on Bob Whitaker's site, whitakeronline.org, a piece that came out, I don't know, a year ago, and they were talking about Teddy Kennedy in the 80s, what came out in the actual Soviet reports, the KGB reports, about how he was one of their appointment. He was an appointment on the 65 Immigration Act. He was an appointment to get that New World Order going in the late 80s. I'd go down on my Twitter and I would read that. It's actual facts. And then put two and two together about what our enemy was trying to do. But one of their major feats of social engineering, something that I've alluded to but I haven't talked about directly, the thing that I would give them most credit for is they accidentally stumbled on the fact that our race is rooted in myth and mystery. They're very dear to us. That energy is always going to flow. But they stumbled onto this alien thing. And this alien thing took a mind of its own, so much so that in regards to Roswell, they had a major coup. If you were to walk down the street, and I invite you to do this because any good social engineering can be proven to your face. If you walk down the street and you ask someone, if you say Roswell UFO, immediately pops into your head, and I don't care who you are, a little gray alien, right? 80% of our race will immediately have that in their head. They'll talk about aliens. That's amazing, because nothing that happened at Roswell, nothing in the picture has anything to do with gray aliens. That's what he's laying out for you. And that's what he can talk about quite convincingly. Now, why does this matter? It matters to our enemy. Well, it's Horace, it doesn't matter, it's just a myth. Yes, it does matter. It doesn't matter if something's real or not real. It matters what you're willing to do with it. Get that through your head when in regards to propaganda. If you learn anything from this podcast, learn that. Myths are important. Very important. And if you want to come out with a book like that, and you want to take them head on at UFO conferences, you want to plant that seed, it only takes one person. It always starts with a sound and a vibration, and he'll start undoing it. And that's what's been done. That is one of the reasons he's feared the most. Forget about all the other stuff for a second. This is a major social engineering coup. They latched onto something, Steven Spielberg's E.T. It didn't even cost them money. They made money off of it. If you compare and contrast that with the social engineering that all the white nationalists know about, the Frankfurt School, Tavistock, that was a colossal failure. That's because you know about it. Great social engineering, you're not going to know about it. It's going to go with the flow. Why? Well, Frankfurt School wants to make us all mocha. Well, that's not going to go with the flow. The vast majority of white rabbits are not interested in blending themselves out of existence. That's why we're still white. You really have to go overboard with the stuff. And even then, you just start hitting a wall. Because it's failed. It's failed. That segment of their social engineering failed. But, let's face it, if you get a New World Order going in the 80s, if you do some knockoff alien invasion, look at what's been done. I mean, more of our race believes in aliens. Little gray aliens landed at Roswell. More of our race believes in that than this actual concept of race. They'll listen to white nationalists talk about that before they'll listen to you talk about race. Think about that. Now, is that from just social engineering? No. Well, part of it is that, and part of it is they've latched onto something quite natural to us. Our race is rooted in myth and mysticism and mystery. Our existence on this planet is a mystery, a scientific mystery. We come from only a handful of mothers. This is a scientific fact. And I don't care how much your local paleo conservative can stand up and say, if we make it, no one knows when our race is going to end. In fact, I know we're not going to. Because push comes to shove, there are elements on this planet that will burn down the planet and live in underground bunkers at the cities that they have and bring back our race from there. I know that for a fact. Even old Bob has alluded to that, so I don't care. But this ideal that you know the beginning or the end, you do not. You do not. There's a sense of mystery that could be naturally used and harnessed to help our race, but you really have to look at it from a different angle. You really have to understand how real race is. But this particular genre of alternative news and research, science fiction for our race always leads science. And in the last half of the 20th century, alternative news and research has led science fiction. Whether it be Ernest Zendel talking about Nazi UFOs or Miguel Serrano and all this Hitler, esoteric Hitler stuff that can't die, Farrell goes into some of that, but his main emphasis is attacking Roswell, is attacking a plank. Now, he does so as a truth seeker, and he does so quite convincingly. If you're willing to stand up at a UFO conference and tell these people this little gray alien didn't land there, may be real, but he didn't land there, that this is a lie. This is a lie of the 20th century. Now, he takes it from a Nazi angle. I don't really care about the Nazi angle. That is his theory. That's his thesis. He's putting out. He's proving it one way or another. All the different patents, all but one of the particular craft that lands there. What he's doing is taking it on heads on at the root concept and pointing out the obvious and telling them this did not happen as they say it happened based on the evidence they present. Forget about whether the evidence is true or not. They're using this, and this thing has legs, right? So in no uncertain terms, I was asked if that's why I'm promoting. Yes. Yes. I don't care about his politics. I'm not idealistic. You just think someone like me is. Care about achieving an objective. He's attacking white. He's attacking it from a different angle, the angle of a truth seeker, and he could do so quite convincingly, talking about Roswell and what happened there and what didn't happen there. Now, everything else is speculation about the Nazis. We don't know that for sure yet, but it's quite convincing, the case he presents. And what is overwhelmingly convincing is that little gray aliens didn't land there. It was a big cover-up of some type. They were using it as a social engineering tool, and he can go on and on about this. He doesn't do that really until Roswell and the Reich, but you can tell from Reich of the Black Sun that that's where he's going. And that's what got a lot of people excited, because he's got the expertise to attack it, and he knows what he's doing, he's willing to do it. Now, I didn't realize he was engaged in what we will call the Great Game at the time I read that book. But what he's doing is attacking Roswell, and that's where we go nuts, because I don't care who you are. I don't even care what color you are. If you're going to stand up and convincingly make a case like he's making it, that little gray aliens didn't land at Roswell, well, I'm going to promote you. And I know lots of parties that are going to promote you. Now, our enemy won't. Our enemy does not like that, because this myth is a major part of their plank on some level. I just know that for a fact. So if you want to wage war against the Red Hippo, especially in this way is totally legal. He can stand up at UFO conference all day long. You ain't going to make a lot of friends by doing it. But you want to do that, I will promote the hell out of you. Yeah, he does so quite convincingly. And myths are very important. Myths are very important. Now let's move on and talk about, let's go at this from another angle and let me answer some more questions. But this whole entire myth, this alien myth that has not cost them a dime compared to the other social engineering, this has made money. Steven Spielberg's ET, this alien stuff, it has legs. It makes money. It makes money in the media. It makes money in Pink Rabbit Media. They love that. The multiracial stuff, you have elites in Europe that partnered with them long ago, or their ancestors partnered with them. They are willing to do anything to get out from underneath it, because it's cost them a fortune. Multiculturalism, which is really just a code word for multiracialism. Europe was already multicultural. Yeah, they're not talking about multicultural. They're talking about multiracialism has cost the elites, doesn't matter how you look at it, a fortune. If you talk about just recent cases of Chinese industrial spying, you can't have it. You can't have it and maintain your power base like they want to do. They know that. They knew that. Some of these groups knew that before they were born. Some of them even switched sides probably because of that. If they had those that have had the opportunity easily, it just doesn't make any business sense. They're not going to run down that road again. The Jews have given them a belly full on that one, and they're the major promoters of multiracialism. Now let's go on and talk about the Great Game. The Great Game is going on. The Great Game is this end game you're coming into, and all the different parties partaking it. And the Great Game is rolling to a start, and it's going to start picking up speed. It's kind of like we're on this mountain, and we're driving up this mountain, and the Green Goddess got her a big mountain bike, and we're in this little wagon, a bunch of little white rabbits bouncing around, and she's going to start picking, at the blink of an eye, she starts picking up speed and doing BMX jumps as she starts heading for the Red Hippo. And as that happens, things are going to start going absolutely bonkers. Bonkers. The people around you will be going bonkers trying to figure out what's going on. But he is getting in front of this Great Game. I didn't realize it reading Reich of the Black Sun, because there's no way to realize it other than he's going to take on the major myth, Roswell. Fantastic. My enemy's coup. This man's going to take it. He's got an Oxford PhD. Don't listen to him if he's convincing. Now, it just so happens that he presents his ideals very well. Very easy to listen to. Yeah, so well, so easy to listen to. They don't like him. There's several different groups that don't want him talking. You know, but that's good. He's got his own website. He'll talk to you on YouTube. Fantastic. He doesn't do anything illegal. Let him undermine the shit out of it. Pardon my French. because it's a lie, and it's a key plank to some of their maneuvers. Now, the Nazi stuff, that's another issue. We're talking about just the Roswell, the little gray alien. That's a major coup. Walk down the street and see for yourself. But in reading, once I read that, you find out that he did the Giza Death Star. That was like back in 2001. And the question was, how did you know there was a weapon hypothesis? Because there's three books there, and actually when I read the first two books, the third book I don't think was out. But I knew from the actual title, looking at the book, that not only was he coming out with a weapons hypothesis for the Great Pyramid, the Giza Complex actually, that he was not only going to engage in that, but he was also going to also engaging the great game, laying the groundwork for what his particular views are of all this stuff. Now, obviously, he's went in a lot of other directions from that, but I knew from the title alone, but I got an ace in the hole on most of my listeners. I know that Star Wars, which I watched as a little kid. Star Wars, I've always liked Star Wars, not a Star Trek fan, but a Star Wars fan. Star Wars itself comes from the Sumerian tablets. I knew that, I've known that for 10-15 years, well maybe 15 years, but that's what it comes from. Now that's kind of a head scratcher, but in the Sumerian tablets what you have is a powerful dark lord who uses a particular, in Star Wars what you have is a dark lord that comes to power through deception, basically, right? He wages war by deception. And he uses this big planetoid that they're building. He turns this planetoid thing into a Death Star. And he uses a particular type of energy system or whatever to blow up a planet. Well, Doc Farrell's reading of the Sumerian text is legitimate with the Germans and what other parties have said, and that it's a war. It's a war document. It's not a creation epic like they was presented in the Jewish Torah. It is a violent. Like in the Old Testament, it is a violent war epic. And in this war epic, you have a dark, sinister figure who uses physics, uses a peculiar type of physics to bust a planet. What many believe, and that's what comes out in Star Wars. That's where he gets the ideal. He didn't just come up with Star Wars. Even the name Anakin, you can find biblical, the Anakin. A lot of this stuff is all threaded throughout it. So I knew from the title that he was going with the weapons hypothesis because I know where George Lucas got it. He got it from the Sumerian. This stuff is not unknown, especially after World War II. Now this is things they don't tell you when you first watch Star Wars, but things that I came to find out. So when I see Giza Death Star, I know immediately he's talking Star Wars, he's talking my language, I know immediately he's going with the weapons hypothesis. Now, he takes his damn time getting to it in the books, that's for sure. But I knew based on the way the books were laid out that this guy's pretty sophisticated, these aren't concepts, you don't write the crazy pyramid books overnight, these are things he thought about for decades on end, maybe even a couple decades. In other words, he's been thinking about doing this. You just don't up and write those the way he's laid them out and everything else. Now, beyond that, it's just been keeping up with his books on where he's going. But he's engaging the great game, and he's writing for what I think he's writing for history. Now, the next question, why does his books seem kind of convoluted? He's coming back to topics. He's moving topics around. Well, he's got to cover a lot of material. He hasn't started talking about publicly what he wants to talk about, in my opinion. He's only alluded to it. And he hasn't covered everything in his books because people haven't asked him a question. But he has a precise methodology, in my opinion. I don't know this for a fact. Don't know anyone that's asked him this. I've never personally. Horace the Avenger has never emailed him. I don't email him from horacethewhiterabbit@gmail.com or any of my or my other Gmail. I've never asked him on the show or anything like that. Would never do that. He's gonna say no. But it's kind of pointless. He writes for the world. But he has a particular methodology that he's using that no one's ever asked him about, in my opinion. And I don't know this for a fact, but I will bet half my checking or 80% of my checking account that he has a precise methodology and he can show you and how he's moving topics around. But he's got to cover a lot of ground quickly. He's got to lay a lot of groundwork quickly because he's engaging the great game. He's talking about what's really going on in the universe and his ideals for this type of thing. Much the same as I've done in this particular podcast. Now, I've done it to put you on a consistent message. I've got an ulterior motive. But at the same time, I'm engaging the great game. I'm talking about big, big events, aren't I? And that's really what he's talking about. And so using his work, it becomes fantastic because I don't have to get 100 sources. I can just get one with 100 sources. You know, but he has a precise methodology. It only appears to be, there's method to the madness is what I'm telling you. Now, whether that methodology is something he created, or something that is, it has to be quite old, because no one knows precisely what it is, but there is a method to his madness of moving topics from book to book. He's setting up certain book series for the future. There is a method to the way he has laid stuff out. It may not appear that way. When you're reading it, you're like, this is convoluted, you know. The Giza Death Star series, I didn't really know what he was fully getting at until reading, The Philosopher's Stone. I knew what he wanted to talk about, but I didn't know where he was really willing to go with some of this information until he went into The Philosopher's Stone. Now, that's one of his great, great books. But, you know, it takes a while for a writer to get the groundwork laid, especially in what he's trying to do. But he's just started writing about things like the Glock, the Bell. He's just laying the groundwork to talk about what he really wants to talk about. And that, in my opinion, is the implications of this physics for religion. How do I know that? I know that from the Giza Death Star series and, especially the second and third book and from what he says in Philosopher's Stone. Everyone on Earth knows that reads this stuff with half a brain. He's engaging the great game, you gotta take it for what it's worth, in Reich of the Black Sun. One of the irritating things about the genre, one thing that if anyone listens to this and knows him, you know, he's gotta hit a spell checker, because Philosopher's Stone is so well written and Reich of the Black Sun is not, he doesn't have a spell checker, but one of the downsides of this genre is an interesting contradiction. Online, rinse.coms make quite a bit of money. They do quite well. Coast to coast. Some of these particular media, online media for alternative news and researchers do quite well, but the book publishers themselves, they don't employ editors at all. And I don't think he allows anyone to edit his stuff, or, you know, and editing your own work is very, very difficult. So, but that all has to do with the great game. So it has a lot of spelling errors that are quite irritating. But if you want to take on the Red Hippo's main plank, you want to take on Roswell, and you want to take it down in the way he's doing it, pointing out the obvious, if I could, I'd put him all over the Discovery and History Channel. Yeah, he can undo it. He started the process of undoing it virtually overnight. It's fantastic. And then he went on to write some pretty clever books. Now, the reason he has to lay out the books like that is because you're dealing with a great many topics that could be dozens of books onto themselves. Nazi International. If you look at one of his sources that starts with an S, that's a famous historical society with about 9,000 members that Ronald Reagan belonged to, that's totally rewriting World War II's ending. I mean, this is a legitimate historical society that deals with U-boats. That source alone is worth the $10 for the book or the $15 for the book. It is an invaluable source. It's stuff that you won't find out anywhere else. Now, what's interesting about Nazi International, believe it or not, many people say, well, he's just taking stuff from this source and presenting it in the book. And that's kind of true. But you generally don't know about this source unless he's the only one that's really talked about him in that way. And that's other than this podcast. I've talked about them directly. When you start talking about Nazi International, what I'm trying to get to is that any one of those chapters could be a dozen books based on that source alone. In other words, if you were walking this historical foundation, they're going to lay documents on you that'll blow your mind by the hundreds, if not thousands. They can do that right now, and they're rewriting all kinds of interesting stuff. So, some of it's quite interesting. It's just most of the planet doesn't know it's happening. But he has a method to the madness, and he hasn't started talking about. I haven't heard anyone ask him about what methodology he employs to move topics around. Again, it's something he invented or something maybe ancient. But he has an actual methodology for moving topics around. And it appears convoluted or appears to be scattered around. There's a method to the madness, but he's doing something very intentionally. And that's his own game, I guess. And what other questions? Let me hold on a second. Let me see what other questions I have here. But you do have to read his books. You have to read them in, it doesn't matter how you start reading them, but you have to go back and read them in order to understand everything he's getting at. He's laying groundwork. This series, the 12 books or 13 books, whatever he's done, is only laying groundwork. Now, JFK is a book I haven't read. I wasn't alive then, so the topic, I hate to say this, but the conspiracy theories around JFK don't really interest me per se. But what he will do, I've got a friend right now that has to come up to speed on this topic, conspiracy theories involving JFK. One can only imagine what's out there. Yeah, but what he will do, and this is the great thing about having someone like him around, is what he will do in JFK, and I haven't read it yet, and probably may not for a while, because it's not in his other series, it's just something he did or was asked to do for one of these alternative news and research publishers. But in this particular series, in this particular book, what he will do is grab every major and minor crazy crackpot JFK theory out there and then put his own spin on it, add his own two cents. What's great about that is if you don't know anything about JFK conspiracy theories, and I don't own a book on the subject, is you can go in, grab his book, and find out what the hell is going on in that segment of alternative news and researchers, you know. That's what's interesting. That's what he does very, very well, whether it be with the crazy pyramid books or whatever. He does everything that puts his own spin on it. But what he really wants to talk about is how this physics, this next generation physics, in my opinion, affects religion. But he's patristics. He knows about early church history and a great deal. Great more than he's telling us, but that's what he really wants to talk about, in my opinion. That's my two cents. But the methodology he employs is nothing standard necessarily, but he's moving topics around. Now, do I employ a similar methodology? Because all these particular MP3s appear to be convoluted. Well, in the first six MP3s that I've done here, that's all I planned on doing. Beyond that, I employ something specific to take it through the first 24. So the first six are geared for one particular endeavor, then the first 24 are geared to do something a lot broader. Then beyond that, I keep the conversation going. But there's any time you have someone engaging the great game, which is what we're doing with White Rabbit Genocide, you're going to have to cover a lot of territory. And a lot of times someone is going to have a method to their madness that you might not know of at the time. It may hit you so many podcasts out, or it may hit you so many books out with Dr. Farrell. But there's more than one party doing this. I ain't the only one. I just happened to luck out because he's a legitimate truth seeker in hot pursuit of the truth and has overtaken it in some areas at least. But that's Dr. Farrell, and then I address hopefully I address Roswell dead on why it's important. Why it's important that if you have a friend that reads alternative news and researchers, why he's the guy you want. He's not going to do anything to hurt him. He's undoing an incredible coup by our enemies. And thank God for that. And thank God Ted Kennedy failed in whatever he was doing in the 80s. Because we would all be bye-bye. Yeah, if you take down the planet with some fake alien deal, well, it really doesn't matter how much your other social engineering fails, does it? Yeah, they actually blame most of the Frankfurt School. Believe it or not, this is how they think. They blame the Frankfurt School and stuff like that for screwing a lot of things up. Which is interesting, isn't it? The way they approached it. In other words, the way they approached it in such an over-the-top, aggressive way that although they demoralize society, what they really done is piss you off and create white nationalists. So if you look at the success regarding Roswell, you know, UFO, Roswell, oh, gray aliens. If you look at that type of success, it's so successful, none of you have ever realized it. Compared to the other type of success, which is such a failure, it spawned white nationalism. It spawned all these actually violent revolutionary struggles nearly. Well, one is a total coup, and the other is a total failure, in so much as they don't have a New World Order right now. Now you have Roswell being undone. Fantastic! But I will promote the hell out of him for that reason alone. I don't care about anything else he's saying. You know? we're just in open warfare with the red hippo, and he wants to bang a drum at Roswell? Good! Fantastic! Put him on the History Channel. Now, in answering your question, why don't they put him on History and Discovery? Because he's alluding to another myth. And this is where I will wrap this podcast up. I'm going to talk about something. I'm going to talk about another myth he's alluding to, which is very, very troubling for some. And I'll be back with you in a second. We're going to talk about that, and I'm going to wrap this up. We're going to talk about the Iron Sky again. Where Dr. Farrell really gets on people's nerves is he talks about the truth, and the truth can get you in trouble. And he talks about a competing myth, competing mythos, and he talks about it in a very convincing way. And right now it's a myth because we don't know the full truth. We know that regardless of what you want to believe, that this group survived. This group, a core group of what you think of as Germans or Nazis, they're called Nazi International Third Power, survived. They became known as the Fifth Power, the Fifth Column, which is interesting because the Fifth Column on TV right now is in V and they're fighting the Visitors because they know the Visitors are evil aliens. It's kind of funny. But they became known as the Fifth Column, and there's a lot of myth and lore about them, but he's documenting certain things about their activities. And this is highly irritating to our enemy because he does it in such a way to create a certain myth and aura around them because they've been somewhat successful in... they've been successful in whatever it is they're doing, obviously. At least thus far. We won't know the whole truth until they actually come out with it. Regardless of what anyone of my listeners believe, this group did survive. There's too much smoke behind it, and they're going somewhere with it. But there's a competing mythos out there, and I've been asked directly about it because my intro song is from a movie, Iron Sky. And the movie is a spoof. It's a funny movie if it actually ever gets made. And I've been asked about some controversy about it. Well, they don't bring out controversy regarding anything good because controversy calls attention to something. Calling attention to something doesn't really matter how you do it. You know, if I walk into a room and I say, you know, don't look at those pink rabbits, you're immediately going to look at it. So the last thing we want to do is call attention to something successful that is being brought out. But there is a competing mythos to Roswell, and that competing myth, what we call a competing mythos, I'll make up a phrase, and that has to do with something that's captured many a white rabbit's imagination, and that is what the Germans were doing, German sophisticated technology, this whole idea of what's called Nazi esotericism. It is a whole genre on itself, so much so that there's a movie being made about a Nazi moon base, that the Nazis were invading from a moon base in 2018, and it is a pretty interesting movie. You can watch the trailer. I use the actual opening song, the opening songs I use. It's called Iron Sky. Yeah, we talked about that before, but this is something that is the reason they're not bringing out the controversy. And I don't even know that the makers of the movie, the makers of the movies are doing it as a spoof film. They think it's a joke. But you have to understand that the basic concept itself is too much for some parties to want to deal with. That the Germans were so advanced that they could have a moon base on. In other words, forget about the spoof part. I'm trying to introduce you to propaganda a little bit more. Forget about the spoof part. Forget about the part that they're making fun of the Nazis. The basic message of the movie is so profound. And that the elements of Germany got all the way to the moon and have a moon base and are going to attack with sophisticated weapons systems, sophisticated crafts. That's a little bit too much for some to bear. It's a competing myth to Roswell, to the little gray alien. It's a competing myth completely because what you're dealing with is Germans. What you're dealing with is something European. The basis of the story itself is profound and outrageous. It's an outrageous myth. I'll assume it's a myth. Now, before you get me, before I get in trouble with little Nazi and he starts emailing me that we don't know for sure, you're 100% correct. You wouldn't know until it shows up on your doorstep. And in the next podcast, these two podcasts are going to be introduced together. I'm going to actually talk about the moon. I'm going to talk about some big mysteries with the moon and how alternative news and researchers really talk about some serious mysteries that no one can answer. We'll get to that in the next podcast, so keep listening before you get upset and start sending emails. But it's a competing myth as of right now. And it's become so dominant that they're making a movie about it. Now, the movie is a spoof film, but that doesn't mean anything. Alex Jones talks about the evil elites, but that really doesn't mean anything, does it? What he's doing is embedding into your consciousness something directly, and you can come at something from many different angles. There's many types of propaganda. And this has become a competing myth, and Dr. Farrell, not only does he lay open Roswell, he actually thinks quite highly of some German researchers, and he lays open what they were really up to. Now, there are many ways to lay that open, but the truth itself is pretty overwhelming to our enemy, and they don't like movies like Iron Sky. Now, of course, you'd say, well, you know, it's Inglourious Basterds was a movie they liked because they're slaughtering Nazis. That's fine. But when you start talking, if the underlying theme, in my opinion, it made them look horrible. But if you talk about the underlying theme of Germans getting all the way to a moon base and having sophisticated weapons, it's a theme that they just don't like to deal with. It's a competing mythos to their Roswell. It's a competing mythos to their little gray alien. That's my two cents on why the controversy Iron Sky. Now, why do I use it? Why do I use the theme song? Because it's irritating to our enemy. because it lets you know that this particular theme is out there. And I don't take it from a perspective that you would. Oh, they're making fun of Germans. I expect any movie on Nazis, if you're going to go mainstream, you're going to have to do something. You're going to have to make fun of it. But the underlying subconscious psychological message is profound. That the Germans were that sophisticated is profound. And it's also racial, isn't it? It's always racial. So there are many ways you can go with it. There are many things you can do, but the underlying message that keeps coming back, the meme, the minimum unit of meaning, that the Germans were far more advanced than you know about and did far more than you know about, and that is a competing, when it comes to space or aliens, stuff like that, it is a competing myth that has now come mainstream, and that's fine with me. Anything that gets away from the red hippos, gray aliens, I'm cool with. Because a red hippo ain't about Germans. It ain't about Germans, other than killing them. We always know that. We already know that. But that is why the controversy with Iron Sky, which I don't think will come out. I don't think there'll be any outward controversy. You just won't hear anything about it. It's like Dr. Farrell. They're not going out of their way to invite him on certain programs that they should. They're not going out. I mean, he'd be great on Discovery Channel, History Channel. In regards to the Glock, and I'll talk about the Glock again, the Bell, in the next podcast. These two podcasts are going to go together. But he could do it, and he could do a much better job than the ones they have on. At least he's a legitimate. At least he doesn't have an axe to grind. He's looking for the truth. He's basically a pacifist, in my opinion, which means in pacifist war things, don't like war, period, and don't believe in war, period, and there's something to be said about it. And in war, all the parties look horrible. So he thinks the United States looks horrible in World War II with dropping the bomb on Nagasaki, the firebombing of Dresden. He thinks the German leadership looks horrible and the Soviet leadership looks horrible. But that's a typical pacifist view. It's understandable, and it's true. In war, everyone looks horrible. But he's talking about... But to wrap up Iron Sky, that's too much. This whole entire subject matter is too much for people to bear, especially if you don't have your New World Order. It worries them, keeps them up at night. It is, I'm of course the only one from a racial perspective talking about it, and I don't have a problem with it, because if you start talking about Germans building moon bases, well, that's extremely racial. You know, the Northern European, whatever. If you talk about Italians doing it, it's racial too. You know, it doesn't matter to me who, but any competing myth I will promote, and this one's a little bit too much for some parties to bear, for certain reasons. I'll go into those reasons in the next one. But all this stuff is coming together, and it's all combined. If you start talking about engaging the great game, which you're in, doesn't matter if you don't want to be in the great game. It doesn't matter if you don't have an interest in the end game. It has an interest in you. It doesn't matter what I want. It's going to have an interest in me because I'm a white rabbit. But if you're engaging the great game, you got to go about it whatever way your agenda is. His agenda is mostly Dr. Farrell's from a truth seeker. Now, Iron Sky, I don't know what the whole detail is behind the movie. I don't know exactly what it's going to end up doing or if it's going to be out on time. I only know the basic underlying theme is a little bit too much for people to handle. It's Nazi esotericism coming mainstream. Doesn't matter if you do it from a humorous angle, if you do it from an angle where a pigeon's crapping on German. It doesn't matter how bad you make them look. The basic underlying subconscious theme, is pretty odd that this stuff is going mainstream, because if you talk to the white nationalists or any of the ones that have been around a long time, this stuff goes back a long ways. It goes back to after World War II. Someone's kept this stuff alive. Ernest Zundel wrote about UFOs of all people, and he went to jail for writing books about World War II in regarding to the what happened or didn't happen to the Jews. He went to jail for that, and he goes back to Miguel Serrano. But it goes back much, much, much earlier than that. The Nazis just ended up resurrecting something in the European psyche, in my opinion, intentionally. But that's another story for another day. Now, what Dr. Farrell really wants to talk about is the implications of this physics for religion. And it has broad implications, because it shouldn't escape you that if you have a unified white rabbit physics, if you have an integration between science, philosophy, and religion, well, that means that all ancient European religions believe in an afterlife. Now, this is where it gets a little out there. But we all always believe in an afterlife. But really, the term afterlife itself is pink rabbit eyes. In fact, it's Judaized, it's Talmudized, this concept of an afterlife. Because really what you're assuming, well, I won't go into that in this podcast. I don't want to go into religion, but what he's doing is talking about what this implies. That's what he's doing when he starts losing people in Giza's Death Star 2 and 3 and Phosphorus. He's wrapping this stuff up about what he really plans on talking about. And of course, he could write book upon book about the Bell. You know, and I'm going to talk about this again, but what he really wants to talk about, in my opinion, is the effect that this has on religion, and is quite provocative. Because if you have a unified, that means every inch of our ancestors' belief must have a scientific basis. Pretty profound. All these different groups believe one thing in particular. There's something in common between the New Testament, the Greeks, the Egyptians, the ancient Hindus, the Norse, the Norse Vikings. There's something in common. There's one thread of one common piece of knowledge that comes back time and time again. And what he's talking about is that not only is this piece of knowledge profound, but what it truly means when you stop looking at it through pink rabbit lenses, when you stop looking at it through when you stop being Judaized, basically. And very few have noticed it or pointed it out. The Nazis resurrected it and scared the planet. And it's a mindset, basically. The Talmud brings about a mindset. When they touch everything, you know, it's like Jesus says, everything they touch, they make their own, but they brought about a mindset. But that doesn't mean what we were before we became what we're not wasn't totally okay. It's just when Aryans take on this particular mindset, it scares some people. And that would be one podcast that I might do, but that's what you want to hear about, what this physics would imply for one of our ancient belief systems that is as real to us as anything else, what it would really imply. And that's what he really wants to talk about. He wants to talk about what this means for religion, what this expands on in the New Testament, what this expands on in the Norse legends, what this means to the Greeks, to the Egyptians. Egyptians especially, but it all, there's a common thread. There's a common coincidence you can point to in all white rabbit religions. There's something there common that he points to, and he says, not only is it real, but it's going to be scientifically real, and it's wild stuff. And it is something that pretty much would do apart, in fact, I in my opinion, has blown apart pink rabbits internally to begin with. That's one of their biggest problems. But that would be a podcast onto itself. But he hasn't talked about what he really wants to talk about. No, he hasn't. He is just engaging the great game, and he has a particular methodology, and it seems convoluted and scattered, but there's a method to the madness. And he's engaging my enemy on their terms, on Roswell, and that alone is worth the price of admission. Let him do it. But that particular genre is really out there because most of the places aren't sourced. There can always be some typos and stuff like that simply because there's no editing. They don't have the wealth of the online media. But one thing about it is implicitly white. It's the whitest media on earth. Myths, science fiction, all this stuff is extremely white. Alternative news and researchers is extremely white. They get a lot of readers that aren't, but they're extremely white. All these guys are implicitly white, and they have a sense of myth and mysticism to their existence that most white rabbits have lost. And that's not necessarily, that is in fact a good thing and a bad thing. Because losing something about our existence that's critical to our existence is always dangerous. It's always dangerous. But anyways, I will go into the next podcast, and we're going to talk about some other things that's all related. It's all related. But we will continue this, and we're coasting through the end game. Yes, we are. We are now at the end of another episode of Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. And this podcast is, of course, all as always, dedicated to practical politics. But I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in to another episode. On behalf of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, it is yours truly, Horus the Avenger, and I'll be back with you in another episode in the near future. Until then, thank you for listening.